Hey, Dan. We're back.
Hey, Jason. Did we go somewhere?
We went.
I've been sitting here the whole time.
We went to the place where podcasts go when they're not being played.
Where is that place?
If you have to ask,
it's a terrifying realm.
You don't get to know.
Really don't want to know.
It's metaphysical. It's Friday. We're recording this toward the end of the week. I've realized that this podcast has been drifting a little bit, like later in the week. But next week we may not do one because I'm like gone next week.
You are also in the place where the podcasts don't go.
Yeah, that's right. They don't go up into the mountains with me. So yeah, I'm going to be in Yosemite and then I'm going to be at Lake Tahoe and I'm not going to be podcasting. But then the week after that there's that Apple event on March 21st. So
there is.
There will be a lot for us to talk about the following week. So I think that's the plan, is that we'll be gone for a little bit more than a week. But then hopefully early to midweek, the week of the 21st, we'll be back and talk a little bit about
Apple event. But what is the sound of one person podcasting? I was going to say your daily Lex, but you know, maybe that's...
Yeah, I don't think that's necessary. I thought about bringing... I might bring my recorder in case I want to catch up with somebody at the Yosemite conference and use that.
I wasn't going to release it, Jason. I was just going to sit here and talk into a microphone by myself for half an hour.
By all means, do that. By all means, do that. So what's going on? You wrote a piece about the smaller iPhone at Macworld.
I did. I'm intrigued by it as a product. I'm also intrigued by a lot of people I know who desire this phone, having, you know, no actual concrete information about it other than it's smaller, and who are possibly even willing to throw over their iPhone 6 or 6S for a smaller phone, surely because it's smaller. And that's an interesting... That's an interesting demographic for me, because I feel like I don't know what the trade-offs are yet. And that's not to say I wouldn't like a smaller phone, although I've gotten very comfortable and very used to the iPhone 6/6S form factor for the most part. It's still a little strange. I definitely realize occasionally still there are like times when I'm trying to hit something in the top left corner while using just my right hand, and it's like, that's just a little too far. And so I can understand why people sort of long for the day of the iPhone 5 form factor. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that I would be quite so quick to trade in my 6S for an SE, if that's what we're calling it.
Yeah, I don't mind my iPhone 6 size at all. I think it's fine, 6S. I don't agree with people who seem, and they're definitely out there, who see phone size as being the equivalent of like processor speed. That bigger is just better, and that's all there is to it. And phones are trending toward bigger. Why would you ever make a smaller phone? All the phones need to be bigger screens and lighter and thinner. And I think we've reached, in most cases, other than... I mean, in terms of processor speed, we will probably never reach this. But in terms of screen size, they can't really get much bigger without just becoming giant tablets. They can't get that much thinner. They can get thinner, but they can't get... It's all going to be incremental because they're already so thin.
We're going to have those Expanse phones that are just a piece
eventually,
of plexiglass.
Yes, in a couple hundred years, we'll have just a piece of glass with stuff on it. But
cutting your hands every time you take it out of your pocket. It's the worst.
But until then... some people are really so quick to write off a smaller phone and be like, well, no one wants smaller phones anymore. And it's not true. It's a niche market. It's not the same market as the 6S and 6S Plus. It's a little side market, but it's still a market. And I talk to people and you talk to people, and this is what some people want. Well, this.
And the thing that struck me was, if you look across the rest of Apple's lineup, literally every other product line has different screen sizes. Mm-hmm. You know, whether we're talking about an iMac, a MacBook, or an iPad, or even an Apple Watch, technically it has two different screen sizes, right? So clearly there is a differentiation that people are making about size. It seems silly to say you've made, as Apple, a bigger phone already. So why not have a smaller phone? If you look over at the iPad lineup, you've got the Mini, the iPad Air, we'll continue calling it the iPad Air until told differently, and the iPad Pro. So you if you're already acknowledging that people need different sizes for different use cases, then why not just make a smaller iPhone?
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's a little weird to me about this is that, and I think because we have so few instances of Apple making multiple models of phones, you know, we had the 5S and 5C, and we had the 6S and or the 6 and Plus, you know, sort of breakdown. And I think that got us into thinking about this in a weird pattern, right? Because the 5C and the 5S, like the 5C, I don't think it's a bad phone, but it was clearly designed to be a not as powerful phone as the 5S.
Yeah, it was just a wrapper on existing technology. It was literally, rather than just selling the 5 for cheaper, they put on a plastic back and sold the 5 for cheaper and called it something new.
Exactly.
But it was no different. It was just a variation, dressing up the standard sell last year's model for $100 less.
Right,
that's
exactly.
All that was different.
What's weird about this to me is that it's doing it mid-cycle, right? It's the spring. Typically, the iPhones have come out basically all at the same time, whether it was when they used to be released in the summer or now when they're released in the fall. And instead, we now have this off-cycle smaller phone, which it kind of reminds me of, was it the fourth generation iPad? Which one came out and then it was the third generation came out and then 6 months later they came out with the fourth generation?
Yeah,
or was it the fourth generation and then the Air?
No, it was the third. The third was the first Retina model. It was the new iPad.
Right, it ran super hot and it had a lot of the battery life did not do particularly well on it, I recalled.
And it struggled to dry the Retina screen, although it did,
right.
But it was really pushing the envelope, and then by the fall they had replaced it with the fourth generation.
So is this, I'm kind of wondering, is this follow that pattern of, is there in 6 months when they release a putative iPhone 7, is there going to be a smaller model that comes with it? They're going to say, we already have this one.
I think we've seen Apple unhitch from a lot of these products from the simultaneous. I mean, the fact that it's launching now, the fact that we get the iPad products launching at different times now, even different years. I think that this is, you know, this phone stays around and continues to be what it is now. And then at some point in a year or two, they'll upgrade the internals again, but it'll be sort of like the brilliance of if the rumors are true and they call it the SE, mm-hmm. You know, the iPhone Special Edition, whatever they want to call it, is small they can edition, keep that phone there with that name forever and just keep up updating the specs and even occasionally updating the look of it, and it just sits there and it's not out of date because it's may not be using the cutting edge stuff that's in the top of the line, but it gets an update to keep its tech relatively modern every few years.
Well, and we talked a little bit about naming stuff, about the iPad stuff, I think, in our last show or two. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, if they're going to keep the iPhone SE and keep that name, do you think they'll ditch the numbering system for the iPhone? Maybe call it, I mean, they could call it something else. I don't know if they call it, you know, we've got the Plus on this side, which doesn't quite line up with the iPad Pro or the MacBook Pro. Though I think your points about what does Pro really mean kind of is a valid question.
There is a rumor that there's an iPad Pro or an iPhone Pro on the way, that the there's going to be two variations of what we think of as the Plus, one of which is like extra expensive and has like fancy camera stuff in it. That seems awfully complicated, but there is that rumor out there.
The iPhone 6, 7 Pro Plus, I don't know. Too many monikers at that point. This the numbering thing, as we discussed in regards to other products, also gets away from them, right? We're on to the iPhone 7. Sooner or later, there's going to be an 8, a 9, a 10. At what point does that start looking ridiculous? Might they be better off just calling it the iPhone or attaching some other, you know, we've got the iPhone, we've got the iPhone SE, we've got the iPhone Plus, done. I don't know, but it seems to me that this, you know, dropping a number from the SE could be significant in the way that you're suggesting, in that it just is a, here's the product, it just sits there, it gets overhauled from time to time, but we don't necessarily need to, you know, increment a number every time.
I don't think that the main iPhone is going to ditch the number, only because it is this premium product. It is the high-end smartphone flagship. It is this incredibly powerful product. People want to know what's in the new iPhone. That talk is really valuable. What's in the iPhone 7? I've got the iPhone 6. I think it's a good product to have a good handle on, like, this is this model of iPhone. So I'm actually kind of feeling like they will keep the numbering for a while. And is there any problem with the idea that the that there's an iPhone 10? Well, probably not, because everybody's using an iPhone 9. And then once it's the iPhone 14, is it that radical to have the iPhone 15? It just
sounds silly, but it's totally a marketing thing, right? Like, there is,
it does. But in 15 years, would it sound silly or not? I don't know. Because the alternative is you just call it the iPhone, but then it makes it hard to talk about the new model iPhone, especially when you're still selling the old model. And that's the really complicated thing, right? And we talked about this on Upgrade. I know we talked about it, and I think you and I talked about it too. This idea that how do you split the iPad line and you split it by product line instead of splitting it by size? Could you do that with the iPhone? But I don't think you can. I think as long as Apple's economics mean that they have to sell, part of the way they sell cheaper phones is by selling old phones, you've got to give them different names. You can't say, well, here's this iPhone, and then for $100 ish, you can get this iPhone. Well, they're both called iPhone, but one of them is cheaper because it's last year's iPhone. People need something to hold on to there. And I think the SE iPhone that we're talking about kind of doesn't need that, because it's in its own slot over on the side. It's not, they're not going to sell five different iPhone SEs, right? There's just going to be the one.
Right, exactly. So you're right that it does make it hard. Although that said, as we talked about, you know, MacBooks don't have different model names, and we seem to get by just fine with those.
Right, but they don't sell last year's MacBook aside this year's MacBook. I think that's the big distinction, is they don't sell, you know, the MacBook Pro 13-inch Retina doesn't come in another 13-inch Retina model that's $150 cheaper. Sure. And what it is it's the previous generation. They don't do that. And that's the challenge with their current strategy with the iPhone and the iPad. They may be going away with the iPad, which is, how do you refer to the old models that are still floating around in your new, as new models? They're old designs, but they're still new. You gotta differentiate them by the name somehow. That's, you know, car dealers don't, they have model years and it's the same product name, but they're not selling both model years simultaneously. They clear out the old models and bring in the new models. And there's always, you can only buy this, you know, Honda Accord. You can't buy, like, would you like last year's Honda Accord for $1,000 less? They don't do that.
Right. This is fair. This is all fair. I think it's always a challenge to come up with naming products, right? You know, I made a joke years ago about Windows. That was like one of the most popular tweets I ever made, just going through, like, the, you know, all the very Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows ME, Windows XP, Windows Vista, Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 10. And it's like, you're all over the place, right? You know, and that's a challenge, because you do want to differentiate and be able to say, this is the new thing. It's not like the old thing. But you also don't necessarily want to be super predictable, or you don't want to be, you know, really, you know, something that ends up looking ridiculous, right? Because we get back into the old, like, Performa model namings, where it's like you just have a bunch of string of numbers and letters attached to it. And good luck, you know, figuring out what's different about all these different products. Car manufacturers, by comparison, have it easy, right? Because they can just attach the year. And so there you go. But yeah, it's definitely a challenge. So I'm interested in seeing what this smaller iPhone actually looks like, how this product is positioned. A lot of people, I think, will still be sort of viewing it as a cheap iPhone, which I think, as with the 5C, is not really the way that Apple rolls. But, you know, there's been a lot of debate about the whole peak iPhone thing. And so the question is, well, is this a move because they feel like we need to goose sales a little bit? I don't think so, because, you know, we saw that didn't work particularly well, the iPad Pro. It didn't reverse the trend of decreasing iPad sales. But, you know, if the market is maturing, then it's getting to the point where it's smart of Apple to be able to play in spaces where other smartphones compete, right? You know, Samsung has every single type of phone you ever want. So, you know, Apple's not going to go to that approach and just do a shotgun of, like, here's every single phone size from, like, 2 inches up to 6 inches.
It's not their game.
But if you identify, you know, three different phone sizes, like a small, medium, large, you know, that's perfectly reasonable to my mind.
I've been using the Amazon Echo more.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by what you think of it, although I was going to mention the story that was going around this week was about how they did a story about it on NPR, and it triggered everybody's.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, this is old news to me, because you and Mike have been griefing me for ages on Upgrade.
Yeah.
Which I occasionally listen to with the speakers on. So this is going to be a problem in some ways if we, you know,
it's the Ahoy telephone technology. Problem.
It is indeed. So what have you found the Echo to have changed in your life, or what do you like about it?
I'm going to write about it at some point, but you know, I'm kind of in the middle of it right now. So what do I like about it? They added support for, there's a third party thing that uses the Nest API to connect. It's a skill, I guess they call those in Echo speak, to connect the Nest thermostat. So I added that, and it's a little weird that they haven't done direct Echo to Nest integration, although it sounds like that's coming, but this third party skill does it. So I have to phrase it a certain way. This is actually one of the things that I've been noticing, is that a lot of the of my work with Alexa is I can get things to work, but I have to phrase things a certain way. And there's no way for me to define, like, somewhere in an interface what all the synonyms for something are.
Right.
You just can't do that. And so the one that kills me is I have to tell the Echo I can't say to set the thermostat to 70 degrees.
Right.
I have to say tell thermostat
yes
to set to 70 degrees.
Yep.
That's dumb, but that's
well, and I have that problem too, because I use the IFTTT stuff and you have to use trigger.
Yeah.
So when I want to say turn on my Xbox, I have to say trigger Xbox.
Yep.
And it is. I agree with you. It's dumb. It's also interesting because it gives you an insight into, in some ways, why third-party integrations with Siri, I think, haven't happened.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah. How do you solve that problem,
especially,
right?
If you want to make it sort of friendly, and if you've got synonyms, and then what if the synonyms kind of clash, and how do you do that? But I do wish I had synonyms. Yeah. I have to remember that if I want to, I've got it set up so I can turn my front lights on and off, but I have to say trigger outside lights.
Right, I can say turn on my office light, but I have to say trigger Apple TV or trigger Xbox if I want to use that integration.
Right, because there's a native integration with Amazon Echo for your Wemo switch, but trigger is to go out to an if this then that command. Also, I noticed one of the things that bugs me is there's no way to... I like it. I will say that. I like it. But I'm also discovering all these weird... You know, when we talk about video games...
idiosyncratic, yes.
Like when we did the incomparable episode about Firewatch, this came up. This idea that in video games, you know, you think that you're in a free world, but then you walk into an invisible wall somewhere. Because the developer's like, nope, you're not going that way. Well, I feel like that way with the Echo sometimes. That I'm walking into these walls and it gets frustrating. So, like... I can't tell. Well, first off, I can't customize sort of like how it reacts to some of the things I say. So when I trigger something, right, it says sending that to IFT.
Yep.
Which is so stupid. Like, first off, who calls it that? I don't call it that. But even if you call it IFT, it's like, can we change that? Can I customize that to something different? It should probably say something different. I love being able to put in if this, then that. Something that says, okay, I'll turn on your lights or something, like a custom string.
Sure.
That the Echo could say, but I can't do that. I also can't trigger, I discovered this today, I can't trigger something on the Echo from if this, then that. So something I can't do is say, if my weather station says that it's raining, have the Echo say that it's raining.
Yes, there's no way to go back.
You can't make it talk.
The Echo is not a that.
Yeah.
It's only a this.
Exactly.
And I agree. I tried around with it. I messed around with that for a while, too, before I discovered that limitation, which is interesting because, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there is a capability to have it say something, which is if you trigger it and say, Simon says something, it will repeat that back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can do that, you know, it can clearly do speech synthesis of any abstract string you give it.
Sure, because that's what it's doing when you ask it for exactly. the weather report, right? It's
right, reading exactly. text. Yep. So if you can do that, I agree with you 100%. You should be able to customize some of the responses. And even more interesting to me is that I think that they're playing with this because sometimes the responses to commands that I give frequently change.
Mm-hmm.
Like for a while there, it just changed back. But for a while there, it changed the what it would say to me when I asked it to set a timer. Because it used to say, it would say like, I would say set a timer for 5 minutes or say your timer will go off or ring 5 minutes from now. And then it would start saying like, timer set for 5 minutes. And you know, I didn't do anything, right? Like I didn't change any settings, mm-hmm. but because it's a device that Amazon controls and can sort of push new software to, I think it's playing around with trying to figure out sort of what is the right level of feedback. And how do I do these things? Because for a while, like I was telling it to connect and disconnect my phone, which is one of my favorite features, and it would just say, you know, disconnecting your phone, connecting your phone. But now it actually says the name of my iPhone.
Yeah.
Which is a little creepy sometimes because at night I'll forget I'll left it connected and I go yes. to like turn my phone off and I just hear this voice go, disconnected from laser screwdriver.
Yeah,
that, like a that away, and it freaks me out.
So I don't know what's going on in the conversation between the two devices over Bluetooth, but I was listening to a podcast and then I paused it and we ate dinner and watched TV and then went to bed. And at like 2 a.m, all of a sudden, Alexa says very loudly, disconnected from Monkey Phone 6S. And it's like, you know what? Shut up. I don't want to hear about your in the middle of the night, especially. It's like, why stop? And I don't know whether that is something where the iPhone is letting go of the Bluetooth connection or
probably
seeing it.
Just a timeout. Yeah.
But here, that's bad. It's bad. That's a bad user interface too. If you forget to manually disconnect from a Bluetooth speaker, the Bluetooth speaker yells at you. That is, yeah, I don't like that. So I actually have that's what I'm doing now, but it's also sort of suppressed my use of it as a Bluetooth speaker because I know that I need to manually disconnect when I'm done or it's going to yell at me in the middle of the night. And I don't like that, but I do like that it's a Bluetooth speaker and I like that it's, the sound quality is fine. It's not great, but it's fine.
It's as good as you can expect for a device of that size that also has all those other features, I feel like.
Yeah, exactly
and
right.
I like the Kinect thing just if only because, as I think I described before, the fact that you can tell it to connect via voice instead of going in and doing the pairing dance is great. I wish everything could do that because Bluetooth is kind of one of those janky protocols, and this really... You know, aside from the manual disconnection thing, which is, I don't know exactly what the right answer for that is. But aside from that, like just having to overlay a layer where I can just say connect or disconnect, this makes things so much easier.
So I don't know what else to say about it. I uploaded my music library to Amazon Music because I wanted to be able to have it play arbitrary songs and albums, and not everything is on Prime Music.
Yeah.
So I paid it's like $25 or something like that, and I can upload my entire music library to Amazon. So I've got it there now too.
I do the lazy man's approach of telling it to connect and then using Siri to tell it what song to play.
Well, that is another way to go.
It's a weird way to go because now you're dealing with multiple robots.
That's my problem with the Sonos music stuff too, is that it's the same story. And this week, that was one of the reasons I brought this up, is that Sonos put out this bizarre blog post from its CEO. It's like 1,000 words and says almost nothing. It basically says, yes, we're laying people off today, and Alexa seems pretty good, and streaming music is good. And then and that's it. You're like, what does that mean? Does that mean... I don't understand. Like, they already were supporting streaming music, so I'm not quite sure what that means in terms of vindication, or are there things they can do with streaming services that they aren't currently doing? And then they praise Alexa specifically while also talking about Siri and OK Google and Cortana, but nobody knows. Does that mean that there's going to be... Because what I would love, because I have some Sonos stuff in my house, is I would love the ability to control it via the Amazon Echo. And the new Echo, what's it called? It's the little puck that doesn't have the big
dot.
Speaker in it. Echo Dot. You know, that's an even better idea, because if you've got the speakers that are connected and that you can control that are really good speakers, you don't even need the tall Amazon Echo, because you use those other speakers, and it could even, you know, it and it's fine, right? But it's unclear. Are they going to support that natively? Are they going to write their own thing? The Sonos Play 5 speaker has microphones in it that are just turned off, but they have like future-proofing microphones in it. Are they going to try to build their own? Are they going to make a deal with Amazon where they put the Alexa technology inside their own speakers? Would Amazon even want that? I don't know. It's all mysterious, but I am left in this place feeling with home tech that I'm kind of disconnected, and like every device I get that connects me with some of my home tech disconnects me from other parts of my home tech. And part of this is the same old reason why, you know, if you want to watch Man in the High Castle and Jessica Jones, you have to pay for Amazon Prime and Netflix, because they're competing with one another, and they're going to make you pay for each of them if you want to get these exclusive things. I feel like that with the home stuff, and it still bugs me that Apple, you know, Apple's got its own standard. It won't, you know, you've got to get a HomeKit capable thing in order to talk to that stuff. Amazon's doing its thing. What's interesting is that Google did make that Nest announcement about Nest working with the Amazon stuff, which suggests to me that there is some hope for these things to interoperate and not wall themselves off, because it's got to be stopping the adoption of all of this technology that it does not work well enough together.
Well, then that's the thing, is from what I can tell, Amazon is not necessarily promulgating any single standard. It's actually one of the most sort of promiscuous, if you will, of any of them.
Other than the fact that the connections seem to have to be built, you know, it's Apple-like in the sense that they connected to If This Then That Now, but you know, they have to write in the explicit connection to something,
right? Yep.
Before you can go down that path. A little like the old Apple TV channels.
Right, but the flip side to that is making Amazon putting out its own standard, which at that point is the old, we have 15 standards, but the problem is none of them do what we want.
I would rather Amazon be like, sure, we'll talk to HomeKit, we'll talk to whatever Google and Nest want to do, whatever. And I think that is their approach, right? Because Amazon kind of doesn't care. It just wants to get you in its ecosystem and sell you stuff.
Right. It has no skin in that game.
Right.
So I think that that's really smart of them, even if it's a little limited in terms of its direct stuff. But if they can even say like, hey, we're going to build in direct native support for these, you know, all these standards that we can do that for, and anything else that we can't, like, hey, if it works with If This Then That, then you're already set. It's a little less convenient, but at least it'll work. And so I think... Yeah, this is the problem. I mean, you know, to me, it's amazing in some ways. You look back on like web browser wars, right? And all the different standards of HTML, and Microsoft adding all its like little special stuff, and Netscape adding all its special stuff. And eventually we got to a place where most, not all, but most stuff is interoperable, right? And so the question is this eventually going to end up like that, where their stuff gets smoothed out as things get more broadly adopted, and eventually we have, you know, sort of a broad... accepted use standard, or are we going to really end up with all these little fiefdoms of, you know, little companies that have their own particular way of doing things, and none of them want to talk to each other?
You'd hope that they could all get tied together with web services as bridges at the very least, right?
Like, sure,
like,
exactly.
You know, if everybody is going through, if the problem is If This Then That is so limited in what it can do, it is like a single, there's no logic to it. It's just like A and then B. It's in the name. But I think there's some hope there. To eventually get there. The more I use the Echo, though, the more I think Apple, especially since it's got Beats, should make a Siri speaker. Apple should make a Siri speaker that's got HomeKit integration. It's like a HomeKit, can act as a HomeKit hub. And it's got a speaker, and it's got Siri built in, and it knows about, you know, whatever other Apple devices you've got in your house and can control them. It's got access to Apple Music. It's got access to your iTunes library and other Siri information. And I think that that is a product that should exist, because I think the Echo shows that it should exist. And I thought about that theoretically before, but now that I've had the Echo in my kitchen for 2 weeks, it's really clear to me that that is a product that should exist. And maybe it's got other features too. Maybe it's an airport repeater or something like that. I don't even know what else they could put in that if they want to make it more complicated. But just having a Siri tower thing that is in your house and is listening to you and can control all the stuff. Because the fact is, I can say Ahoy Telephone. I can do that. But I don't want to. Honestly, I would rather talk to the Echo, because it can hear better and it can talk back to me better, because it's got louder speakers. And it's not going to kick me to my phone when I don't want to look at my phone, which Siri on the iPhone often will do. It'll bring up a card and say, here's my answer for you. And, you know, the Echo can't punt to a screen. The
Echo is stuck talking.
It can do is talk to you.
It's a design constraint, right? Mm-hmm. And that is the best thing.
It's like pure Siri would be cool. Just pure Siri. All you can do is talk to it.
Yeah, and so, you know, same thing, where, like, the number of times where, so, you know, to sort of vaguely, compare these things, Siri will say, like, oh, I looked that up on the web for you because I have no idea what you're saying to me, versus, you know, perhaps more frustratingly at times, the Echo will say, like, I can't find the answer to that question, or I don't know what you mean. But at that point, at least you think either, A, okay, I ran up against a wall, or B, let me see if I can rephrase this in some way they'll understand. Whereas with Siri, I think it's like, well, yeah, you kind of punted. That's the perfect word for that. It's like, well, I guess I'm going to have to find some other way to do this, or I have to look at my phone. When you have the constraint of only being able to interact with something via voice and audio, I think it makes it much more interesting in terms of what the choices, the design choices you make are. Yeah. I agree. I would love to see Apple make a device like this. I don't know if that's something that they would consider, if only because I feel like for a company that does like to it does like to enter established categories, but right now the Echo is such a iconic,
I feel,
you know,
like this
Amazon
is,
product.
It's an ecosystem play, though, right? I feel like they have to be in here, or they're going to lose the, you know, if people like me are going, oh, I really kind of like the Amazon Echo, that's pushing me more into Amazon's sphere than I was, and away from Apple's sphere, because the Echo doesn't support Apple Music, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, and the fact that they make a company that makes speakers, right? It just sort of seems like this, I don't know, to me, it seems like they've got all the technology required to do this, and I think they should make that product.
It's a matter of the will at this point. I mean, a lot of people thought the Apple TV might be sort of a hub, but the problem is it requires you to have your TV on.
Yeah,
I don't know what he wants to do that, and I think the Siri stuff is not as advanced as you would like it to be in terms of, I mean, it's not always on, it can't always listen, etc.
Isn't that it? I mean, it is. It can't always listen now, like on your phone, it can always listen, right? But I think maybe the core of why this product doesn't exist is not that Apple doesn't want to make a speaker, or not that Apple doesn't believe that this might be an interesting product direction. I kind of wonder if what's holding it back is that Siri's not good enough.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this on a Rebound episode recently, but I think, you know, the question is, it seems like Siri has advanced very small ways in the last couple of years.
It's
definitely better, but it's not, they focus on the wrong sorts of things, right? Like, they add more bells and whistles, which is fine. Like, okay, it can do a few more things. It can give you sports scores, it can give you movie times, etc. And yet they haven't, what we're all looking for, I think, is sort of, not to get too, you know, cliche here, but like a quantum leap, right? Like, everyone's looking for it to take the Siri to the next level and to be just better and smarter and more responsive and able to suss out these things. I mean, I've been very impressed with the little bit that I've tried Hound, which is SoundHound's little, you know, little voice activated assistant app. Because it can do things like narrow down, like, oh, show me coffee shops around here that, you know, only that have free Wi-Fi. Show me Japanese restaurants. Just show me the ones that you know, aren't sushi restaurants or whatever. It seems to be much better, or at least there seems to be advancement there in terms of making it do more complex things. And when you try to do the same thing to Siri, it just sort of throws up its hands and like, this is the best I got. This is all I can do for you. So, is it possible that Apple is sitting on, like, rather than just rolling out like constant, like small little changes to Siri, it's like, we got to take this back and sort of like re-architect it and make just like a Siri 2, essentially, that's like just an entirely better product? I think it's possible that they are doing something like that, but it also a lot of times feels like, well, we put this product out, like, it's done, it's over there, we're just going to move on to the next thing. And it's like, that's depressing, because you had a lot of good potential there, and then you squandered it by not really doing anything with it.
Yeah, Yeah, I think that is emblematic of a lot of products that I see at Apple, that it does not feel like they are frantically iterating, furiously iterating on these products to make them great. There are some products at Apple that are using that playbook, and those are the best products, and those are the most important products, usually. The iPhone certainly feels that way. And yet there are other places that, depending on your feelings about that product, it could be a very important product to you, where it's clear that Apple... or at least it seems awfully clear that Apple is not as focused on that. And Siri, to me, is one of those where, you know, I kind of some of it is beneath the waterline. You just don't know what they're doing because it's happening on the server. But it does not feel like it is relentlessly moving forward. It's more like they polish off a few features once a year to drop into a keynote, and then it just sort of lays there for a year. And the competition, you know, the good competition doesn't do that. The good competition is always adding things. I'm impressed by the fact that Amazon, for Pete's sake, that is not a company with a really great track record in terms of building their own technology products. I like my Kindle, but they've also made a whole bunch of ridiculous technology moves too. They're not famous for their software excellence. They're not favored for their customer-facing cloud services. It's not like the thing that they're known for, right? And yet, that Echo, they keep announcing, like, we added this, we added that, we added
this thing. Every week. I got one today. Like, every Friday, I think now, I get an email that's like, hey, this is what we added to Alexa this week. And you're like, well, great, cool, all right, I'll try that out, you know? And that's not a thing that you get from Apple with, like, hey, we just added this thing, like, every week, you know? They don't do that. That's not their model. So it is refreshing in some ways to feel like, hey, this is a product I bought and I spent a decent amount of money on, and it's in active development.
Yeah.
It is being actively improved, and there are people working on it all the time to try and make this experience better. That's exactly what we want from our Apple products. But because of the way Apple does its, you know, its development and its secrecy and all of that, it just, that's not what we get from them. So yeah. I agree with you. I'd like to see a massively improved Siri, but I'm just unsure as to whether or not that's something that Apple's even interested in.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see. I think it's a very important product that they need to keep pushing forward on. And, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
But yeah, like you said, you know, having the Echo around, I think, to me, it has solidified. I know there are a lot of people who are very skeptical about this, and a lot of people still make cracks to me on Twitter about, like, oh, it's always listening to you. Amazon's privacy record is true. Okay, yeah. you can say that about, you know, people were saying that about iPhones too. We're like, oh, it tracks your location everywhere you go. It's like, yeah, okay, but, like, do you want the features or not? And the
your
answer
iPhone
for me
listens
is,
to you too.
Yeah, the answer for me is, it's totally clear to me, having used the Echo for, you know, the better, probably close to a year now, this is going to be, voice communication with technology is going to be the way that we interact with a lot of our technology. It just is, because it's so natural. It works really well for a lot of things. Like, you know, you look at, like, all the HoloLens demos and stuff like that, and it's like, okay, I can see the utility of putting on this headset and looking at virtual objects. But, like, when you think about how easy it is to talk to something, it's just a no-brainer to me, you know? And so I think that the indication to me that voice, you know, communication with technology is going to be one of the major paradigms for interacting with technology, why would you not want to be in that space and actively working on that?
Yeah.
So.
Well, we'll see what happens. So, good talk this week. We're going to skip next week unless I come back with a surprise, but it won't be you and me. It'll be like people out in the woods interviewed out in the snow. But failing that, we'll be back after the Apple event, and you know, we'll break it down. We'll have some thoughts, I'm sure. And then also hoping to get a Six Colors magazine out before the Apple event, so next week. So you will hear from us in written form instead.
And of course on the blog.
And of course we'll be there. There'll be more of Dan than me next week, because again, I will be in a place where there's very little internet.
Please God, let there be something to talk about other than the FBI.
Yeah, you can just talk about movie trailers some more. There'll probably be new movie trailers.
You guys like that, right?
You know? And thanks to everybody out there for subscribing. This is it's great that you help us do what we do by supporting Six Colors. So thank you. And all we got you was this podcast.
Enjoy.